Well, good morning and welcome here. All of us will soon be taking grades and needing to deal with that somehow. I remember when I started teaching, I thought, well, now here is something that I don't need any of those beclouded looks that this conference has already referenced. Here is something that's very objective. It's kind of like Jack in the Box. You turn the crank and the music tinkles, and after a while, pop, and you have a grade and you enter that into the report card. Well, it turns out it's not quite that simple. Yes, it is maybe more objective than some of the things that you'll be relating to as a teacher, but it does turn out that there is more ambiguity in this subject than perhaps you realized. I'm not here to make you miserable here at all or to have another thing of which to wonder about. We'd like to make this be a clarifying experience, not one that beclouds unnecessarily. I've worked with my dad as an electrician. He worked with people a lot as he was pastor in his congregation there. But one of the things that he said that he likes about electrical work, I noticed that whenever he nailed boxes on the walls for outlets and switches, that he did so with a happiness and a gusto and an abandon of which he didn't normally have, not even with the rest of the electrical project. And I asked him about that one day. I said, "You really like nailing on boxes, don't you?" And he said, "Yeah." He said, "That's just a favorite part of my job." And I said, "Well, why is that?" Well, he said, whenever he's doing that, he's thinking about working with people. When you work with people, you think you have it nailed down. You think you have everything measured out and the height is right and the distance out of the stud is correct and everything else. But he said, you turn around and you look back and the box left, making the parallel here. We're back to the subject again of how objective is grading. There are parts of it that are very objective, and there are parts of it that are very understandable, but then there are parts of it that are not. Grading is not a mindless coast downhill. Systemized? Yes. Yes, indeed. Mindless? No. From the teacher, grading requires care. It requires thoughtfulness. It requires discipline. And if you approach this function of teaching without care, without thoughtfulness, without discipline, well, then it will come on to you in ways that you might not be personally comfortable with just saying. Right? Grading requires judgment calls. Grading requires judgment calls that are sometimes difficult. Objective? Yes. Subjective? Also yes. Right? Subjective means that the judgment call is not always black or white. And another issue about grades is that it trundles obliviously into student emotion. Students care deeply about their grades, healthy ones do, and you'll experience some pushback about your judgment calls, and that pushback may be emotionally oriented. I do not have a handout for this topic. I'd rather suggest that you make your own. There's something that happens as your pencil wiggles, which is a good thing in this case. And if you watch what's going on here with the presentation, it should be easy enough to get the main points at least. So with grading, we're going to try to divide this topic into two sections. The one is, what are we trying to do? And then next of all, how are we going to do it? And it seems to me that any field of worthwhile human endeavor, if we can define what we're doing and how we're doing it, well, we've at least made it to first base, have we not? I think so. So let's get into the what are we trying to do with grades. First of all, we're trying to determine how well a student is doing. That is the purpose of grades. Joe Biden, remember him? He said, "When my first semester grades came out, my mom and dad told me I wouldn't be playing football." Right? Said he wouldn't be playing football. Thank you, Joe, for that little presentation technique. Well, his parents read his grades and says, you're going to have your nose to the grindstone harder than what football is going to permit. I suppose this was in college. One youngster, when showing his report card to his father, he broke the news gently what the teacher had told him about probable trouble coming. And he says, "Daddy, I hate to tell you this, but teacher said if these grades don't improve, somebody's going to get spanked." Pretty obvious he didn't know who that somebody was. Perhaps he didn't know what grades were for. I think he did. Somebody didn't understand what we're trying to do with grades. Grades are something of a dashboard. One of the things I did this summer is I drove dump truck. Heavy trucks are usually well endowed with lots of gauges. What do those gauges do? Well, they're an at-a-glance index of what's going on in places that might not be so obvious. Even Toyota Echos and Chevy Sonics, our most basic models, have dashboards, right? Your grades are a dashboard in that they inform about the stuff that's happening. They report on important areas of student performance and current status. They speak about things, and this maybe should be on the presentation. If you're taking notes, I want to help you along because I feel maybe I should have prepared a handout, but I do want you to be involved. They indicate things about student mastery. Did the student master the lesson? Or in the case of a test, whatever is being tested, did the students master it? Are they achieving those daily micro concepts and practices that support, say, mathematical unit on fractions? Secondly, just general knowledge. Think of it as a dipstick on the engine for oil level. So we talk about an A student or a C student. What we're talking about is how much general knowledge, how easily it's grasped, and how much of a grasp they really have. In reporting on these things, it also becomes something of a report on diligence. Thirdly, how well a student is doing. Just in diligence, it can be a secondary index to diligence. Of course, a student can be very diligent, in fact, more diligent than your A student and still be a C student. But there is this aspect of grades. And it may even suggest some things about the student's character. Do they have a willing attitude? Are they obedient? Are they on time? And other such noble character traits, with individual aptitude notwithstanding. Of course, that's the context. We're talking about what are we trying to do with grades. We're trying to determine, first of all, how well a student is doing. Secondly, we're trying to determine if a student can advance. Ultimately, or we could say at the end of the day, grades are almost the whole determinant of a pass-fail. And so they become something of a line in the sand to determine, are we going to advance or are we not? And so grades do inform. They give the student feedback, they give us feedback, they give the parents feedback, and they give the board, where the decision rests as far as a pass or fail in the ultimate sense. Still working the first main point, what are we trying to do with grades? We're not trying to be the student's friend. Right? Sometimes teachers get the notion that they must be the student's friend. But what you see going on here may be something that will be going on in your classroom in a little while. There's some pretty heavy-duty explaining going on there. I'm not sure you make your own deductions. Of course, a teacher is to be friendly and a friend, but a teacher needs to be an adult type of friend in a juvenile environment. And that type of friend is different than a peer type of friend. Grades are where being an adult type, age differentiated friend to a school student comes into the fore, right? So this is a conversation we don't hear among friends. Do you like my new dress? And the response is, I'd say about an E minus. Right? See, something is not coming together here. That's not the way we interact as friends. I read once about a husband who said his wife excels in asking him difficult questions such as, do these jeans make me look fat? Well, the problem is not the jeans. The problem is other things, right? As a teacher, we do need to get comfortable with giving accurate grades despite what it might suggest about the person that you want to be friendly towards. But go ahead and take the time to explain it, even if the recipient is a bit stony and cold. Peers type friends don't give grades, but teachers do, and teachers must. Right, let's move on to the next question. How are we going to do it? Is there a right way to give grades? Well, sure, there's plenty of incorrect ways to come up with a score that is not what we want, not valuable. So we'd like to talk about some components of right grading, some proper grading methods, how to, see, adverbs tell how, so the next few points will be adverbs. How are we going to do it? We're going to do it consistently. Consistently suggests many things. day by day, the grade should be predictable. It should be predictable how points are counted. It should be based on maybe a rubric. Did you ever hear the term rubric? A rubric is simply a guide for scoring according to a predetermined qualification, right? It's one thing if you're giving a daily math grade, you have 25 problems, and it becomes a simple function of mathematics if they got three wrong to determine what percentage you had right. But when you're grading an essay, or when you're grading conduct, or when you're grading keyboarding, or when you're grading those types of subjective things, it's nice to decide at first, how are we going to do this, right? Here is a grading rubric. For me, this was Mr. Jonathan's No Secret Method for Making Conduct Grades on Report Cards. And it gives me 10 points of how to make a conduct grade. And I gave this to my students, and I had this laying beside me when I was making a conduct grade, right? I was trying to do it with a measure of consistency, right? According to a rubric, right? If we're not consistent with our grading, even simple grades such as math, you will hear things like this in your classroom. But you let that go yesterday, or you let that go before. And those are valid words that we ought to take seriously, right? Our grading should be consistent. The situation, true, may or may not be the same. But we do need to examine that comment, because teachers do need to be concerned about consistency. How are we going to do it? We're going to do it understandably. Understandably means it makes sense, right? It makes sense to everybody. Here's an example. I have the policy that if a word is misspelled, I don't count it wrong unless it's in spelling. Understand? Well, that's an example of understandably. Because when I'm grading a math paper, and they misspell their label, rabbits, well, why should that affect the math grade? There should be another consequence, which meant that if a math paper got the word rabbits circled, then they needed to rewrite that word rabbits 10 times correctly, right? But we're getting into something other than grading there to have them rewrite words. But whatever methods you're using for grading, it should be understandable to your students especially. You may have to represent why you counted something half wrong in math. Well, it did not have commas to divide the periods. It did not have the label in the answer. All these are examples of grading understandably, right? The way you count points in diagram in a sentence, it should be understandable. Not, back to the first point A, not one way one day and another way another day. In fact, it should be so understandable the way you count points that the students don't need to argue or question at all how they arrived at the number wrong for that particular sentence. I think I have an illustration of this. The way I would have done it, the policy that I had, is every blank was a point. You can do it whatever way you choose. The slanted line, the straight line for the complement, the direct object, the predicate adjective, whatever, I counted that as a point, right? Every line was a point with one exception, and that is that vertical one dividing the subject and verb, right? And it was understandable enough. I wanted it that the students could grade their own work. They could tell me how many they had wrong without having to have a big discussion every time. And that's the way it should be with your policies for grading too. It should be understandable enough that whatever particular grade level you're teaching, the students know what to do and they know how to do it. This is another way that we grade. We grade accurately. Speaking now, wearing a father hat, when I as a dad look at a report card on the couch with my son or daughter, I want to know that it's an accurate report of what's going on, right? I'm trusting that the teacher who sent this report card home had accuracy as a pretty high concern as they created it. So teachers, let's be careful that we strive for accuracy. Both when your students do checking, sometimes you need to check to be sure that they're scoring accurately, and of course when we're doing it too. So if the students are checking their own work, do some spot checking. or have them, if you're suspicious, hand in the assignments for you to look over it. If a student hasn't been trustworthy, they must earn that trust back before you just let them score on their own again. If a student is sloppy, perhaps you exchange papers to check. I'm thinking of that type of situation now. If they're sloppy in scoring and they're not counting things wrong that should be counted wrong and counting things wrong that shouldn't be counted wrong, well, I found it effective to say the mistake goes into your grade, not the paper that you were checking. And that usually cleans it up pretty quickly. We're not necessarily striving for perfection, but we are certainly looking for something that is accurate, something that is sustainable. Here's another pointer for accuracy. Be careful how you use pre-counted points. In other words, if there's a number of points for a test, for a quiz, or even the previous teacher sometimes writes in 42, you better know how they counted those points. Otherwise, you're statistically skewered, and you may end up with ratty data, right? Maybe I'll just pause right now to say that Christian Light and Rod and Staff, on their pre-printed tests, they often have a point count. Do you know how that works? If you don't know how it works, by all means, do not use it, right? If you do know how it works, it can be as handy as a pocket on a shirt, right? I wasn't able to always identify how it works when in some curriculums. Christian Light, I think, is fairly consistent. In a test or in a quiz, it will tell you that this is a three-point number. This is a one-point number. And so if they get a one-pointer wrong, well, then from 100%, you deduct 1 point. If they got one of the three-pointers wrong, well, then you need to deduct 3 points, right? And you don't even need to get out your easy grader. We'll get into some of this a bit later. But I'm just saying, beware of pre-counted points provided by other sources. A fourth way we grade is we grade defensively. You need to understand the material being graded and what's going on in the grading process well enough to make a sound judgment call. Because that judgment call, it might be contested. It might be contested by a student, and it might be contested by a parent. Either one should be considered valid. You must be open to challenge for several reasons. First, we all make mistakes, right? And this might be a mistake, so let's be humble about it and fix it. I know of situations where the mistakes got to be pretty high stake, where report cards got sent home with somebody else's data entered into the report card. Well, that's a mistake, and let's own it up, and let's just take care of it, right? So mistakes can be serious, or they can, of course, be less serious, but whatever the case, let's work accurately enough that in the case we need to defend it while we're situated to do so. There are some situations also that are rather complex, right? And perhaps you just weren't thinking of everything. I'm thinking now of more subjective literature type of questions, that type of thing. Thirdly, another reason we need to do it defensively is that everybody has a right to know how that grade was developed. There's no reason to say, well, it was just a woman's intuition. Well, that won't work for me. Gut feeling might be better, right? But that's really still pretty poor, right? We can go with something more solid. There is a place where we can stand. We need to find solidarity, and then we need to stand on that and grade accordingly. In my first year of teaching, I had something of a prodigy student who was able to consistently score 95% or above in any subject. And in memory class, she always scored 100%. And one day, something was terribly wrong because she got like a 96. And so in my, generosity and love and mercy, I told her that she gets to re-say it. She gets a second chance at it because something was obviously wrong, right? Well, of course, now I can look back on that and you can look on it too and see that, yes, something is obviously wrong, but not the thing that I'm targeting, right? Well, it was good that the students pushed back on that and said, Mr. Jonathan, I got a 78% the other day and I didn't get to redo it. Why does she get a second chance and I don't? Great question, right? Was the pushback valid? Of course it was. We're talking about how to do grading. These are the ways we do it. Additionally, not on my slide presentation, we need to do it sustainably. And I just would, without developing this idea very far, I would just mention that you were hired to be a teacher, not necessarily a checker, right? So let's get these things in proper priority, right? I think that that suggests that we need to be more prepared to teach than spending hours and hours and hours late into the evening checking. Now, it may require that sometimes, right? But let's be sure that you don't do the mistake that one of my teacher friends did, and that he got all wadded up on the complexities of checking, so much so to the point where it affected his ability to actually teach. And he had to quit teaching when he still had a lot of school teacher left in him. But the problem was is he didn't have so much checker left in him. That had been all depleted hours ago, late at night. Right, so we talked about doing it consistently, understandably, accurately, defensibly, all how-to words, right? We're going to continue with this how-to do it question, but not with the adjectives that end in L-Y. Tips for grading accurately. Let's dive into that one just a little bit more. How to make the grade tell the tale. I chose that picture because that light bulb is being handed across and there's a concept there, right? And that's what grades are doing. The one person has the light. You as a teacher know how well the student is doing. You know what grade they should be getting. If you teach long enough, you know what grade they should be getting almost without checking their work, right? Although we will continue to check their work. But then the grade passes that over to some other interested party, the student, the parent, the board, and so on. So let's first of all talk a little bit about how to develop statistically correct grades. Most of our grades in academic material are what we would call criteria-based. In other words, they're testing the student's knowledge and ability against a certain criteria. So we expect them to understand in fourth grade up to this level of understanding of functions with fractions, right? When they're in seventh and eighth grade, it's up to this level. So we're testing against that criteria. And the way that the world understands how we can communicate, how we can hand the light bulb across to the other interested party is by developing a percentage grade, a percentage of what we had wrong or a percentage of what we had correct. Which one is it? Correct, of course. If you got a 95%, that means 95% wrong. We could statistically just as well said you got a 5% saying that you got 5% wrong, right? Now, it seems maybe a little bit trite or a little bit mundane to actually go across this, but I have heard of teachers who I thought were as intelligent as you, and probably were actually. They were just having something wrong that day relating to grading. But I know of some situations where they deducted 1% for every one that they had wrong. Didn't matter how many points were in the lesson. It was just like, well, yeah, you just deducted. They got one wrong, 1% off, right? Well, it doesn't work that way, folks. Did you hear me say that? It doesn't work that way, okay? Not at all. Not at all, okay? So how do we develop a grade mathematically and statistically? Well, you take the number of problems. Let me think. This happens so naturally. Oh, yeah, and then you get your easier grade and go, right? Well, yeah, you do, right? You can do it that way. And you ought to have an easy grader, and you ought to know how to use it, set the number of points. What it's doing, that easy grader, is doing all that math behind it, behind the scenes. So you take the number wrong, take the total number of points, subtract the number wrong, and divide the number correct by the total number of points. 20 points total in the lesson, 3 wrong, minus 3 equals 17, divided by 20. It will give you an 85% every time, right? Because it's math, right? That's the way to develop a grade that's statistically correct, right? I think we'll just leave it at that and move on. We also need to understand how to have school-wide consistency. Every school needs a policy, and you shall ask your board what that policy is. And if they don't have one, ask them for one. That does make some problems sometimes between teachers within the same organization. This teacher grades easy, this teacher grades hard. It's hard enough to get rid of all that, but we can at least clean up the school-wide policy. The school-wide policy, what it does is it helps us understand how much of the homework grade, if any, should be factored into the report card. Right? Some schools are going to take daily grades and some aren't. And that's not your business to determine that. Right? It's the school board's business to determine that. Okay? Those two methods, daily grades versus just quizzes and tests, those two methods are actually culturally rooted. And you coming in there, even as an intelligent individual, you're not positioned to make that judgment call. That's what the school board is for, right? I have heard scripture quoted for both methods, all right? I'll just suggest that it's not worthy of trotting out scriptures. Save that for things that are more worthwhile. Let the school tell you how to record your daily grades, not to record your daily grades. Also, let your school tell you what is an A minus from thus and so percentage point to thus and so percentage point. You might think that, well, everybody understands what that is. We found out not necessarily, right? And so this does make a difference. So on report cards, it does make a difference in, whether or not our grading is as accurate as it could be, whether or not it's statistically pure. All right, let's keep on talking about how we can make the grades tell the tale. Understand the difference between practice work and mastery work, right? Mastery work is something that is not characteristic of most first grade work. A lot of first grade work, second grade work, is just practice work. And so a higher grade should be required to pass in lower grades. And again, we're not going to dive into that, but if your first grader is making well over an 80%, maybe an 85, that doesn't necessarily mean that they're going to succeed in second grade, because so much of that work is practice work and it's not mastery type work. Same is not the case in sixth grade or seventh grade. But there are rubrics, there's that word again, to help us determine whether or not a first grader is reading properly. CLE has developed a reading rubric, and that actually will be more revealing, more meaningful data than, say, this first grader got a 90% on their report card for reading. Go to those reading rubrics for scoring practice-type work rather than mastery-type work. Also understand that, I went ahead there. Let's back up a little bit. We'll get to grading on a curve. But understand the element of teacher help. That can actually affect a grade quite a bit as well. Don't get too much of your knowledge in the grade if possible. In Ben-Hur, in the chariot races, one fly sitting on the axle hub of the chariot said to the other fly, he says, "My, what a dust do we raise." Well, the fly had almost nothing to do with it, right? He was just along for the ride. Well, that can be the case in our classrooms too. Right? Another illustration would be is mountain climbing. I've read various books, and maybe you have too, about these Sherpas that drag these plump Americans up to the top of Mount Everest, and then who do they take the picture of when they get to the top, right? Really, it should be the Sherpa, right? But it's a student in our case, right? And so we need to be aware that before we're too quick to say, "My, what a successful student," well, there's more than one way to help, right? We need to engage the students' minds in the whole learning process. And maybe we have time for this. I'd helped a girl through seventh grade rod and staff math, and she was 17 years old, had been homeschooled, and she didn't like math, so they just didn't do very much of it. At the end of the year, she had a 74% report card average. Seventh grade, 17 years old, And the parents told me, we're sending her to school one more year. I mean, she's getting old enough, she ought to be out of school, and you jolly well make the best of it, right? Well, I knew that that 74% had a lot of my effort into it. I had done the Sherpa thing quite a bit, okay? And with that considered, we redid the seventh grade math book, even though the Rod and staff suggested 70% passing, failing, line in the sand criteria. She had passed, technically, but I knew it had too much of me in there. So the rest of the story is we redid the seventh grade math book, and that year she gained over 3 years worth of academic ability, as proven by the achievement test, which is something for another day here at this conference. All right, let's talk a little bit more about what happened. It went away. How to grade on a curve. So let's suppose that we do get to the point where we realize that we took a test. That's especially where you would want to apply a curve. You took a test, but there's a section of this test that I didn't cover well enough as a teacher. Or there's a section of the test you feel that this should have never been there in the first place. I have almost more disclaimers about grading on a curve than I do how to do it, right? I think that with curriculum today that has been refined to the extent that it has, you shouldn't be needing to curve the grades. Curve means push them up artificially, right? There may be some times that it is appropriate. Maybe it's partly your fault and you know it, right? So I'd like to show you how to curve a grade. So what you, rather than just decide, well, I'm going to add 10% to everybody's score. Well, what about the student that got a 91% or a 96? That's not the way you curve grades, right? The way you curve grades is you find the distance from 100, first of all, and work that number. So if a student got a 70%, they're 30 points below 100, right? So then you use that 30-point number, that difference, and multiply it by a predetermined decimal that applies to everybody. So multiply that 30%, multiply that 30% times, say, 0.3. Well, that student gets curved, boosted, 9%, right? Or you say, well, that's too much. Well, let's multiply it by 0.2. Now that student, instead of having a 70, has a 76, right? So you see, when we're working with the difference between their actual grade that they got and 100, now it affects the student that only has a 10% difference between, they got a 90, right? 10% difference between 100. You multiply 10% by 0.3, their curb, their grade gets boosted 3%, right? Or you're multiplying by 0.2, their grade gets boosted 2%. That's the way you grade on a curb, if it's understandable to do so, if it's defensible to do so, and some of these other things we went across, right? Making sense? I guess I did have some slides on that. There it is. Review. Right. That's what I have for sharing this morning. I know that we're in a big group. I have some concluding thoughts here, but I am going to open it up if you have any questions, concerns. But I would simply point out the fact that we are all headed towards the final judgment. And there's something about grades that reminds me of that, right? There's an accountability that comes with a student that knows you're getting a grade that reminds me of Revelation 20. I saw a great white throne. The books were open. The small, the great were judged out of those things that were written according to their works. Let's make the grades interface, our grades interface with this larger truth, right? And I think that as we keep our feet placed according to some of the principles that I've been trying to mention here this morning, it will indeed prepare our students for this great and final judgment. All right, so your turn. Is there a part that you had expected that you would hear and didn't hear anything about? Is there any question, comment? I'm going to open it up.
You know, if any time it's appropriate to go over 100%.
All right. Is it ever appropriate to go over 100%? Statistically, it's possible, and you can actually enter that into your calculator or maybe your grading program, and it does not choke up the abilities of a calculator, right? Okay. It becomes a conceptual thing. Is it possible to get more than a perfect score? Right? And what you will find is that some teachers say yes and other teachers say no. So my answer to you on that question is some teachers will say yes and other teachers will say no. Right? Just whatever you're comfortable with, whatever you're going to have to defend, because if you say yes, you're going to have to defend it. If you say no, you're going to have to defend it. So whatever you're satisfied with defending. Because statistically, it's okay. Yes?
Are you putting an accurate score on the report card for a test to give us the grade they got the third time?
Great question. Are you putting, are you honoring accuracy when you put a score on a report card that they got the third try? Now, that one I have a bigger opinion on. Right? Did you give all the students a third try? Usually not in those situations, right? Well, what if we had? What about the student that got a 92? Could we let them take the test three? Did they have the option of taking the test three times too? Usually not, right? So I don't think it's fair to just say, well, we'll take the third grade, right? So come up with something defensible. What does Jonah defend on that question? Yeah.
In real life, if I blow it, they're going to remember. So if they blow it, I'm going.
Yeah, I think the first test and the second test needs to also have some consequence and some statistical weighting there. That's the way I would have done it. I'm not sure about the third test thing. I choked on that one a little bit. I generally said you get a second test, and that's where we stop testing. After a while, we're starting to play some sort of, I don't know what, throwing beans into a box and see how many we can hit from 30 feet or something. You know, this is becoming something other than a good, solid academic exercise. Yes?
While we're talking about tests, would you share something about test weight versus hitting?
Yeah. That would fit under the point about school-wide policy. If you're taking daily grades, then how much of the report card should be daily grades and how much of it should be tests and quizzes, right? Your school board should answer that. I feel very strongly that your school board should be saying, I would be most familiar with saying you get the test average for the marking period and you get the homework average for the marking period if you're taking daily grades, and you blend them on a 50-50 ratio. I talked to a teacher just within the last week that their school was taking the homework and saying it's 25% and the tests and quizzes are 75%. That's okay too. I don't really think you can go wrong with this so much. I don't think you can go wrong with whether or not you even record the daily grades or whether you don't. I have tracked this side by side. We're going to get a report card grade now, including daily grades at a 50-50 and not including any of the daily grades. So in other words, zero, but not entering it as zero, of course. Statistically, there isn't much difference. Statistically, there's no reason to get your Bible out. Statistically, there's no reason for you to get your dander up about this stuff. Right? Yes?
So I was thinking a little bit more about the question about retesting. And we tend to be a little bit down or negative about retesting, and I agree with that. But one of the things that we're more okay with is kind of like helping our students read maybe they learn, you know, this much content in history. But we help them review 50% of it really well because we know that's the stuff that's going to go to test. And it seems like that's kind of an acceptable way to, you know, it seems like people are kind of okay with it. But if the test is supposed to represent how well the student is learning the material, then to help them review part of the material so they get a better test grade is also the same thing as retesting in some ways. Mm-hmm. It's just kind of trying to adjust the results so that it doesn't exactly represent how well they learned the material, but maybe I'm wrong. Maybe I'm too hard.
Well, there's just going to be this tension between teaching to the test and being fair. I think a student should know what they're going to be tested about. May I say, find my way, next question? yes.
Just keep in mind that a test is a test, and a grade should be an accurate representation of where that student is. Like, I think we get, for myself, I get the thing of how many problems they got wrong all mixed up with an accurate representation of who they are and where they're at.
Okay.
Because I had a student who struggled like crazy and got a really good, finally got a really good spelling test score, but it was his second try, so it ended up being 78 when he actually got 100. And it was good to see him get the good score. He was happy about it, but he stood to face that accurate representation of where he was.
Another subject or question that comes up sometimes, what do you do if the student didn't follow the directions? It said underline and instead they circled or something like that. Are you gonna make that affect a math test grade? These are the things, this is why teachers walk around hollow-eyed, because they worry about that kind of stuff. But it's not so funny. When you think about it, that I had a friend who was going to take an exam for doing testing on, he was going to do state inspection on vehicles. Okay, he had an automotive garage, and he had to be certified right before he was allowed to say whether or not this vehicle passes inspection, is worthy to be driven on that state's roads. He went there as a 38-year-old, and he also went with the boss's son, who was 18 years old. Okay, and they both took the test the same time. The 38-year-old, my friend, failed, and the 18-year-old passed. But they compared notes later, and the 38-year-old had actually answered more questions accurately than the 18-year-old. But the reason the 18-year-old passed and the 38-year-old failed is because the 38-year-old didn't, can you guess it? Follow directions. And he tried to explain to the proctor, he said, well, look, if you, it says circle, and I just underline, you know, if you just make that little transition here, just work this patch kit here for me. And the proctor told him, and I think we would all agree, if you can't be trusted to follow directions on a simple test, can I trust you to inspect a vehicle? Right? Figure it out. Is the student in competition with the test? Explain that a little more. Okay.
That concept is what I kind of have to question.
Yeah.
Are we trying to help the student learn, or is it the curriculum against the student?
Okay, that's a great question. I think what we're discussing here is that this is where I go with that. Maybe this is a knee-jerk response. It's not right. But we are working with criteria-based tests. In other words, the students are supposed to be able to get every answer on that test. Now, on achievement tests, it isn't that way. We kind of have this pile of problems that the student's supposed to be able to climb their way up. But at some point, we know they're going to lose traction. They're going to spin out. Right? That's a little bit of a different situation. That's not the way our tests are written that you will be administering at the end of your math, language, whatever. Right? That would be a norms-based test where we're trying to see how high they can climb, knowing that they're going to lose traction. Okay? That's not the way we give it. So with that backdrop, is a student in competition with the test? Well, so far as I want to get every problem right, yes. But as far as, you know, two boys arm wrestling, not really. I'm not sure if that answered your question, Titus, but maybe you had more that you've heard me head down that dingleweed path.
Right. And
Right.
It's a representation of the learning process of the person.
That's right. All right, the men have had an unfair representation. Ladies, did you have anything you wanted to comment, ask about? Well, there was your chance. Go ahead. Any others?
Is it more sustainable? Have people found it to be more sustainable to use flat scoring or the weighted method, or like a lesson or even a test?
So you're talking about recording daily grades versus not? Or
just grading one lesson. Is it better to use a flat score, like 1 point per problem, or to use 3 points and 2 points?
Oh. Well, you certainly can't just use 1 point per problem regardless of how many problems are on the lesson. But what is really difficult, if you're going to say, well, this is a 3 point question, this is a 1 point question, the way Christian Light would have it on their tests, for instance, that's really difficult to come up with that for every, like a homework grade. I wouldn't really recommend that, right? But the advantage of doing it that method is the person who is designing the curriculum and designing the test can say a true or false answer just doesn't require the amount of weight because or knowledge to answer that true or false. Besides, a monkey has a 50% chance of getting it right. But when we get into a situation where it's a fill in the blank or multiple choice, well, statistically, the monkeys are out to lunch on multiple choice or fill in the blank, they're gone, right? They're not a player in the game anymore. And so something like that it would make sense to have more weight, but to come up with that system for your daily homework assignments. Mm-mm. However, there are things like, say, algebra, where reading problems, I did say that every reading problem was a 5-point problem. If you could show me the 5 steps that aligned with that curriculum that were definitely recordable on a paper, if you went through the first 4 steps correctly and then in solving it, you messed up. Well, you got 4 points. Sustainable? Much harder. But it was more fair. And that, I would have said in analyzing that, it's worth the effort for that extra accuracy dimension. What time is this to stop? Now? Thank you. Well, Lord bless you in your grading processes this year.